You know, it's pretty striking how often you hear about data breaches these days. Almost feels normal, which is worrying.
It really does.
And it just hammers home how vital it is to, well, understand how to protect our digital stuff, right? All the information we kind of hand over to technology.
Absolutely. We're just swimming in data, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's constantly being created, shared, and the sources we looked at for today's deep dive, they make it crystal clear.
Yeah.
Robust data protection isn't just some, nice to have idea. It's absolutely fundamental for security, personally, professionally, everywhere.
Exactly. So for this deep dive into data protection, we've pulled from materials on information security principles, some CISSP prep stuff too. And what really stood out to me is these aren't just like abstract theories. They're real practical things that affect anyone who deals with data, which, let's be honest, is pretty much everyone now.
Pretty much, yeah.
So our mission today really is to pull out the key nuggets from these sources, give you a solid grasp of what data protection actually means, and maybe more importantly, why it matters so much.
Sound good.
Okay, so let's just get right into it. According to the sources, what's the core idea? What is data protection, basically?
Fundamentally, the sources frame it as, well, the practice of securing information, protecting it from anyone seeing it, using it, messing with it, or even destroying it if they're not supposed to. Unauthorized access, use, disclosure, disruption, all of that.
Right.
It's about building a strong defense around your valuable data. And what's interesting is it's not just about stopping hackers. It's also about guarding against, accidental loss or someone inside misusing it.
Ah, okay. So it's broader than just keeping the bad guys out. It's the whole life cycle and integrity of the information.
Exactly.
And with cyber threats getting, well, smarter all the time, it makes this even more critical now, doesn't it?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, think about the sheer amount of sensitive data we handle every single day. The potential fallout, if that protection fails, is huge.
Yeah.
Our sources really hammer this home, the real-world consequences. We're talking massive fines under laws like GDPR or FIDR,
Yeah.
messy legal battles, and serious damage to a company's reputation. Losing customer
That
trust.
trust part is
It
huge.
really is.
Yeah.
So it's often not just good practice, it's a legal requirement with some very real teeth if you don't comply.
Okay, so avoiding those nightmare scenarios is a big driver. Now, as we dug into the sources, some core principles kept popping up. Let's start with the CIA triad. Sounds pretty central.
Oh, it absolutely is foundational. The CIA triad confidentiality, integrity, and availability, it's consistently presented in our sources as like the heart of information security.
Okay, break that down a bit.
Sure. So confidentiality, that's making sure only the right people can access sensitive data. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Then integrity, that's about keeping the data accurate and trustworthy, making sure it hasn't been tampered with without authorization.
Right, no sneaky changes.
Exactly. And availability, that just means authorized users can actually get to the data when they need it. The systems are up and running. What's really insightful, though, is how they're interlinked. A failure in one area can mess up the others.
How so?
Well, imagine a system is always available, great availability, but the data inside got corrupted, maybe maliciously. That's a loss of integrity. So even though it's available, the data's useless, or worse, misleading.
Ah, I see. Yeah, it's no good being able to access garbage data. Okay, that makes sense. It needs to be accessible and trustworthy and private.
That's the balance.
All right, another huge area seems to be risk management. How do the sources talk about its role in data protection?
Risk management is presented as absolutely critical, non-negotiable, really. The sources stress that you need a proactive approach. You've got to find the risks, figure out how bad they are, and then do something about them.
Proactive, not reactive.
Exactly. And they often mention the risk equation. Risk equals threat times vulnerability times impact. So a threat is the potential bad thing, like malware or a hacker. A vulnerability is the weakness it could exploit, maybe unpatched software. And the impact is how bad it would be if it happened. Data loss, downtime, fines.
Got it. Threat X, vulnerability X, impact.
Understanding that helps you figure out where to focus your security efforts. What's interesting is that sources suggest organizations sometimes underestimate the impact part. They don't fully grasp the true cost of a breach.
So they might not invest enough in fixing the vulnerability.
Precisely. Or they might accept a risk they really shouldn't.
Right.
And it's not a one-shot deal either. The sources emphasize revisiting risks constantly because the threats are always changing.
Right, it's a moving target. Okay, so you assess the risks using that equation, then what? What do you actually do about them?
Well, the sources lay out a few main ways to handle risk. There's acceptance, basically acknowledging the risk and deciding you can live with the potential consequences, maybe because fixing it is too expensive.
Okay, sometimes you just accept it.
Sometimes. Then there's avoidance. You just stop doing the risky thing altogether. Get rid of the system or activity causing the risk.
Makes sense.
Mitigation is probably the most common, and that's where you put security controls in place to make the risk less likely or less impactful if it happens. Like installing firewalls or training staff.
Right, reducing the odds or the damage.
And finally, there's transfer. Often this means buying insurance, so you shift the financial hit of the risk onto someone else.
Ah, like cyber insurance.
Exactly. And a key thing our sources point out here is the balancing act. Organizations need to understand their risk appetite, how much risk they're generally willing to take to achieve their goals, and their risk tolerance. How much deviation from that appetite is okay for a specific risk?
Appetite and tolerance. Sounds like it needs careful thought, tying security decisions back to the business itself.
Very much so. It has to align.
Okay, next up, data classification. This feels like maybe the starting point, knowing what needs protecting most.
You nailed it. Data classification is consistently presented as a cornerstone. It's the process of labeling data based on how sensitive it is.
Like different levels.
Yeah, common ones mentioned are things like public, internal use only, confidential, and maybe highly confidential or restricted.
Okay.
And this labeling is crucial because it tells you what kind of security controls are needed for each type. You wouldn't protect public marketing material the same way you protect, say, secret R&D data.
Right.
Highly confidential data, because the impact of it getting out is so severe, needs the strongest controls like encryption everywhere, strict access rules, you name it.
It's like knowing which drawers need the strongest locks.
Exactly that analogy. Yeah, yeah. You sort your stuff based on value before you decide on the locks.
Makes perfect sense. Then we get into principles like least privilege and separation of duties. These sound like they're about limiting potential damage.
Precisely. They're about minimizing opportunity and impact if something does go wrong, or even preventing it in the first place. Least privilege is fundamental. Users should only get the absolute minimum access rights they need to do their job. No more.
So don't give everyone the keys to the kingdom.
Exactly. This massively reduces the potential damage if an account gets compromised, or if an insider makes a mistake or acts maliciously. If they only have access to their stuff, the blast radius is much smaller.
Okay. And separation of duties.
That's a control to stop one person from having end-to-end control over a critical process, especially something involving money or sensitive data. Think about approving payments. You might need one person to request it, another to approve it.
Checks and balances.
Exactly. It makes fraud or significant errors much harder because it requires two or more people colluding. It's about preventing concentration of power or control.
Got it. Limiting what people can access and making sure no single person can control a whole sensitive process. That makes sense. Now, what about need to know? How's that different from least privilege? They sound similar.
They're definitely related, but need to know is maybe a bit more granular, more specific. Least privilege sets your overall access level based on your role. Need to know says even within that role, you should only access the specific information required for a specific task you're doing right now.
Okay, so even if my job generally lets me see all customer files, need to know might mean I should only look at the file for the one customer I'm currently helping.
Perfect example. It's a more focused application of access control, ensuring people don't just browse information, even if they technically have permission, unless they have a valid reason for that specific data at that specific time.
Right, reinforcing relevance. Okay, these principles lay a really strong foundation. Now let's get practical. How are these ideas actually put into action? Let's talk technical and administrative controls. Encryption seems like a big one on the tech side.
Oh, absolutely huge. Encryption is a cornerstone technical control. It basically scrambles data so it's unreadable junk to anyone without the right key.
Making it gibberish.
Pretty much. And the sources stress its importance for data in transit when it's flying across networks like email or web traffic, and data at rest when it's just sitting on a hard drive, a server, a laptop.
Both states need protection.
Yes. And they mention specific algorithms like AES, that's the Advanced Encryption Standard, very common for symmetric encryption, and RSA, which is used for asymmetric encryption.
Symmetric and asymmetric. Mm-hmm. What's the difference there quickly?
Sure. Symmetric uses the same secret key to encrypt and decrypt. It's generally faster, good for large volumes of data. Asymmetric uses two keys, a public key to encrypt and a private key to decrypt. It's a bit slower, but really useful for things like securely sharing keys or digital signatures.
Okay, different tools for different encryption jobs. Got it. What about access controls? We talked about the principle of least privilege, but what are the actual controls used to enforce it?
Right, access controls are the mechanisms that actually do the enforcing. The sources break them down into a few types. You've got physical controls.
Like locks on doors.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Locks, security guards, server cages, even biometric scanners for entry. Things that stop unauthorized people from physically getting to the equipment or data.
Okay.
Then there are logical controls. These are the digital ones. Passwords, multi-factor authentication, smart cards, and things called access control lists, or ACLs.
ACLs?
Yeah, think of an ACL as a very specific permission slip for a digital resource, like a file or folder. It lists exactly who, which users or groups can do what, read, write, delete, etc. Very granular control.
Like a bouncer with a detailed guest list for each room.
Good analogy. And finally, you have administrative controls. These are things like the security policies themselves, procedures, background checks, and security awareness training. They guide how people should use their access.
Okay, so it's a mix. Physical barriers, digital rules, and human procedures and training. Layers.
Layers are key. Defense in depth.
Right. Then we have firewalls and intrusion detection or prevention systems, IDSVR.
Sound like network guards.
That's a good way to put it. Firewalls are basically the gatekeepers for network traffic. They sit between networks like your internal network and the internet and decide what traffic is allowed in or out based on predefined rules.
Filtering the traffic.
Yep. And there are different types, like stateful firewalls that track active connections, offering more context than older stateless ones. Now, IDS and IPS go a step further.
How so?
An intrusion detection system, or IDS, watches the network traffic for suspicious patterns or no attack signatures. If it sees something bad, it raises an alarm. It detects.
Okay, it tells you something's wrong.
Right. An intrusion prevention system, or IPS, does the same detection, but it can also take action automatically. It can block the malicious traffic, reset a connection, basically try to prevent the attack from succeeding.
So IDS is the lookout. IPS is the guard who can tackle the intruder.
Exactly. IPS is more active.
Got it. Now, shifting to the administrative side, security policies seem pretty fundamental, right? Just setting the rules?
Absolutely essential. Security policies are the documented rules and standards for an organization. They define what's expected, what's prohibited, and how security should be handled overall.
The official rule book.
Pretty much. They provide the framework, the authority for all the other controls. Without clear, communicated policies, enforcing security consistently is, well, really difficult. Everyone needs to know what the expectations are.
And you can have the best tech, the best policies, but if people aren't clued in, that seems like a weak link. Which brings us to security awareness training.
Crucial. Absolutely crucial. Training employees about the threats they face, phishing emails are a huge one.
Yeah.
The importance of strong, unique passwords, using multi-factor authentication, how to spot suspicious stuff and who to report it to, it's vital. Human error is, unfortunately, a massive factor in so many breaches.
So turning employees from a potential vulnerability into part of the defense.
That's the goal. Make them a strong first line of defense, a human firewall, if you like.
I like that. Human firewall. Okay. The sources also mention a couple of techniques, data masking and pseudonymization for protecting data while it's being used.
Yeah, these are really useful, especially when you need to use sensitive data for things like software testing, development, or maybe data analytics, but you don't want to expose the real live sensitive info.
How do they work?
So data masking basically hides or replaces sensitive data elements with fake but realistic looking data, like swapping real credit card numbers with structurally valid but completely bogus numbers, or scrambling names.
Okay, obscures the real data.
Right. Pseudonymization is slightly different. It replaces direct identifiers, like a name or a social security number, with a consistent but artificial identifier, a pseudonym. You can still link records belonging to the same person using the pseudonym, which is great for analysis, but you can't directly tell who the person is without a separate securely stored key.
Ah, so you can still see patterns and analyze the data set, but the individuals remain anonymous unless you have that special key.
Exactly. Both methods reduce the risk significantly while still allowing the data to be useful for certain purposes.
Clever. Okay, we also saw data loss prevention systems mentioned. DLP, what do they do?
DLP systems are designed specifically to stop sensitive data from leaving the organization's control when it shouldn't.
Like emailing a confidential file out by mistake.
Precisely that kind of thing. Or trying to copy sensitive data to a USB drive or upload it to a personal cloud storage account. DLP systems scan outgoing data emails, web uploads, file transfers, looking for patterns that match confidential information based on rules you set up.
And if they find something?
They can take action. Block the email, prevent the file copy, alert an administrator, maybe encrypt the data automatically. It's about preventing data exfiltration, whether accidental or malicious.
Like a security guard checking bags on the way out, but for digital data.
That's a pretty good analogy, yeah.
Okay, and one more in this technical admin control area. Security Configuration Management, SCM. Sounds a bit dry, but important.
It might sound dry, but it's really important for maintaining a solid baseline of security. SCM is the whole process of making sure your systems, servers, laptops, network devices, applications are set up securely and stay that way.
No.
It involves things like having standard secure build images, applying patches promptly, disabling services you don't need, hardening configurations according to security benchmarks, and then monitoring to make sure things don't drift away from that secure state. It's about preventing vulnerabilities creeping in through misconfiguration.
Gotcha. Setting things up right and keeping them right. Okay, we've covered a lot of internal controls. But data protection isn't just an internal company thing, is it? There are laws and regulations.
Oh, absolutely critical. Legal and regulatory compliance is a massive piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Organizations have to follow numerous laws about how they collect, use, store, and protect personal data.
Like GDPR.
GDPR in Europe is a huge one, yeah. And HIPAA in the U.S. for healthcare information. There are many others, depending on the industry and location. And failing to comply. Well, we mentioned it earlier, big fines, legal trouble, and that reputational damage again. It's non-negotiable.
Serious stuff. The sources also brought up DPIAs and DPAs. What are those about?
Right. A DPIA is a data protection impact assessment, sometimes also called PIA, privacy impact assessment. It's basically a risk assessment focused specifically on privacy and data protection.
When would you do one?
Typically, you'd do one before starting a new project or deploying a new system or starting a new type of data processing, especially if it involves sensitive data or new technology.
Mm.
It's about proactively identifying and minimizing privacy risks before they become a problem, building privacy in from the start.
Okay, proactive risk assessment for privacy and DPAs.
A DPA is a data processing agreement. This is a legal contract. It's used when one organization, the data controller, who decides why and how data is processed, uses another company, a data processor, to handle data on their behalf, like using a cloud provider or a payroll service.
Ah, okay, when you outsource.
Exactly. The DPA lays out the rules for the processor. It specifies what they can and can't do with the data, the security measures they must have in place, and ensures they handle the data compliantly according to the controller's instructions and the relevant laws. It clarifies responsibilities.
So formalizing the rules of engagement when data leaves your direct control but is still your responsibility makes sense.
It's crucial for managing third-party risk.
Right, okay. Now, data isn't static. It gets created, used, shared, and eventually deleted.
Right.
What about protecting it throughout that whole journey, the data lifecycle?
Yeah, data lifecycle management is key. You need security considerations at every stage, from secure creation or collection to secure storage, secure use, controlled sharing, and very importantly, secure disposal.
Secure disposal, getting rid of old hard drives and things.
Exactly. You can't just toss an old computer or hard drive in the bin if it ever held sensitive data.
Mm.
Our sources stress the need for proper sanitization, securely wiping the data so it's unrecoverable, or physical destruction, like shredding hard drives. Otherwise, someone could literally pull your data out of the trash.
Dumpster diving for data. Yikes.
It happens. And tied into this is the need for data retention policies. These policies define how long different kinds of data should be kept based on legal requirements, business needs, and crucially, when it should be securely destroyed. Keeping data forever is often a liability, not an asset.
So protect it while you need it, know how long that is, and then get rid of it securely.
That's the idea. Minimizes risk.
Okay, almost there. Lastly, the sources mention governance and business continuity. How do these big picture concepts fit in?
Well, security governance is about the overall direction and oversight. It ensures that all these security policies and practices we've discussed actually align with the organization's goals and strategy. It's about leadership commitment, accountability, and making sure security supports the business.
Setting the tone from the top.
Precisely. And then business continuity planning, BCP, and disaster recovery, DRP, are about resilience. They focus on making sure the business can keep operating and data remains available and intact, even if something bad happens, a cyber attack, a fire, a natural disaster.
Having a plan B.
And plan C. A core part of BCP is the business impact analysis, or BIA. That helps identify the most critical business functions and what data and systems they absolutely depend on, so you can prioritize recovery efforts effectively. It ensures you can bounce back.
So governance sets the direction, and BCPDRP ensures you can weather the storms and keep the data safe and accessible.
You got it. It brings it all together.
Wow. Okay. That was definitely a deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground on data protection. So if we had to boil it down, what are the main takeaways from all this material?
I think the biggest takeaway is that data protection isn't simple. It's not one thing. It's this really complex, multifaceted discipline. It involves understanding core principles like CIA, managing risk, implementing a whole range of technical and administrative controls.
Right, the tech and the people side.
Exactly. Plus, strict compliance with laws, managing that whole data lifecycle from start to finish, and having strong governance and plans for when things go wrong. It really requires constant effort, vigilance, and adapting to new threats. It's an ongoing commitment.
A continuous process, not a destination. And like we said at the start, understanding these ideas isn't just for the techies or security pros anymore, is it?
Not at all.
It feels relevant for, well, pretty much everyone in today's world, whether you're just trying to get up to speed for a meeting, stay informed, or you're just curious about how your own info is handled.
Precisely. It impacts us all.
So maybe a final thought for you, the learner, listening in, thinking about everything we've just unpacked, all the principles, controls, the life cycle. What's maybe one key idea or practice that really stood out to you? Something you could consciously apply, maybe in your own life or at work, to do a slightly better job of safeguarding digital information?
That's a good challenge.
Yeah, just something to reflect on. Maybe pick one area that sparked your interest and look into it a bit more. Anyway, thanks for joining us for this in-depth look at data protection.
Yeah, thanks for listening.